So the evening as a whole is on the ethical guidelines, which are a draft thing, something that someone drafted as a initial starting point for Tree Ratna centres. And some centres have just adopted them as they are. But some have kind of had a bit of a discussion and maybe amended them a bit or just in a way made them their own. So I just thought that would be really valuable. Whether we make any changes to them or not, just kind of engaging with them, checking in with our situation, our the particular beings in our Sangha, and yeah, just seeing if they kind of say what we think is helpful for them to say. So that's more what we'll be looking at in the second half, actually having a look, hopefully in an enjoyable way, at the ethical guidelines. I know the risk of saying that now is that people leave in droves at the tea break, which you are at liberty to do. But anyway, we'll have that. I explore them a bit in the second half. And in the first half, I'm going to speak a little bit, probably 10-15 minutes, and then we'll do an open period of just sitting meditation. But I'll give you a little kind of bit of guidance if you want it for that. And then we'll have a short discussion in groups before the tea break. So my subheading, my kind of theme when I was thinking about this was being discerning, being compassionate, and being wise. So being discerning, I was thinking, it doesn't mean being judging or not being judging in a judgmental way. So discerning things has a value, but it can stray into something a bit more harsh and judgmental. So by discerning, I don't mean those kind of harsh, critical judgments of ourselves or others. And being compassionate doesn't mean kind of accepting everything, that everything's okay, or saying that things are okay when actually they feel not okay at all for you. So it doesn't mean losing your critical, your discerning faculties. So I was kind of having a sense of these being balanced, discernment and compassion. And yeah, we need to hold both. Not abandoning the discernment in saying, oh yes, it's fine, I forgive everything, it's all okay, when it doesn't feel that's the case. So balancing those. And being wise, well, hopefully that will become clear as I talk. It doesn't mean, for example, having a university degree. Not that I have anything against university degrees, but it's a different kind of quality, faculty that I'm talking about. So firstly on being discerning and how that might be different to making judgments. So I've been thinking recently, I've been doing a course at Bangor University on mindfulness, and it's quite a powerful idea in the mindfulness movement and in contemporary Buddhist teachings, the idea of meeting your experience with an unjudging awareness. Have people heard that phrase? So meeting experience with an unjudging awareness, so a particular quality of awareness, of mindfulness that we're bringing to our experience that is called unjudging. So I've been exploring the degree to which that idea is reflected in the early Buddhist teachings, in the Pali Canon, in those early texts, the idea of being unjudging. So I was thinking, was the Buddha unjudging? He was direct. He could be quite pokey, I think, sometimes. Very clear. He asked people to be very clear, very honest, certainly very discerning about their experience, about their state of mind. So in the Satipatthana Sutta, the Sutta on the Foundations of Mindfulness, I'm going to read you just a few lines from that. If aversion is present in him, he knows aversion is present in me. When anger is present, she knows there is anger in me. When their minds are affected by malice, they know it. So there's quite a lot in the early Buddhist tradition on being clear and precise, on discerning, cognizing, knowing, being really clear about what state of mind you're in, knowing if it's a skillful or an unskillful state of mind, i.e. if it's ethical or not ethical, if it will lead to your greater happiness or to your greater suffering. So a lot on being as clear as you can be about what is actually going on in our minds, knowing it and acknowledging it. But, I put this in capitals and bold. It's important that we don't turn that discernment, that clarity about an unskillful state of mind, into something that we beat ourselves up with for having this unskillful state of mind. So important that we don't turn it into a reason to feel bad about ourselves. So that's where I think discernment has this risk in it, doesn't it? We want to be clear, we want to see when something that we're doing isn't helpful. And can we manage to just leave it at that and not add unhelpful guilt or gloom and doom about it? So the Buddha's discernment is not a harsh critical judgment directed at either himself or others. It's a very clean, clear seeing. And I think in recent years, I don't know for how long, but the kind of modern psychology, that thinking, has really deepened our understanding of how unhelpful it is to have those harsh, critical inner voices. Especially if people are vulnerable to depression, then those critical inner voices can be really tough and really unhelpful. So, if you've got some of those inner critical voices, actually there's no if about it, is there? We've all got, in some form or other, some kind of critical inner voice, whether it gets more directed outwards or inwards. So when they pop up, those judging critical thoughts, what's our practice? I had a few on the allotment today, little harumphy, little critical ranty thoughts. And I suppose the practice is to recognise them, try not to judge them back and beat them up, because that's just meeting their energy, the judging energy, with more of the same. But we might not be able to help that. Thoughts arise, don't they? Judgments arise. So if you can't help meeting those judgments with more judgments about the first lot of judgments, well, there it is. Try not to judge those judgments of the judgments, the first ones. And then there might be more that judge the judgments of the judgments of the judgments. So you might find that you're sitting in meditation with one judging thought piling in after the other. But I think certainly my experience is that eventually the process runs out of steam, or the mind actually just gets a bit confused by which judging thought is judging which judging thing, and something a bit like a computer program just crashes because it can't quite cope with keeping track of what was happening. So the whole program may just crash and the judging run out of a bit of steam and stop just for a bit. So yeah, maybe just to laugh at it, if you can, is a very good medicine. So yeah, the practice as best we can to turn towards them, to see them, those thoughts, to just turn towards them and to see them, to know them for what they are. And what are they? So I was thinking, what they are in their deepest nature is conditioned and empty things, those thoughts that arise. They are shunyata, or in the Pali, anatta. They're empty of self. They're not fixed, they're not solid, they're not independent of everything else. So judging thoughts, like all thoughts, arise on the basis of conditions. Conditions like childhood conditioning, our parents' voices, sometimes the voices we have in ourselves we recognise as a parent or another person's voice from our childhood. They might come from movies, from TV, some of those voices, from the culture around us. Somehow I think they come from genetics, and they come just from the deep tendencies that we all have as human beings to aversion and craving, to wanting some things and not wanting other things. So that kind of pushing and pulling in relation to experience. That is, if anyone wants to have a look on the way out, on the Wheel of Life, just in the lobby area, just out there, that image of the Tibetan Wheel of Life, at the heart of that wheel are the three creatures chasing each other, chasing their tails, and they are craving, aversion, and ignorance. So they're kind of hardwired deep in there as human tendencies. And seeing that is what I mean by being wise. So seeing the conditioned nature of things, knowing that there are reasons for things, conditions for things, even if they're not visible to us. Reasons for other people doing things. And that includes our own unskillful thoughts, unskillful actions. They don't pop out of nowhere. They arise on the basis of conditions. And just really seeing how deeply ingrained they are in us, in all of us, is to have a wisdom perspective. To see how strong that tendency is to see things from the point of view of me, and what's in it for me, and what do I want and what do I not want. So just, yeah, seeing how those tendencies operate in us, lead us and others to do things which cause sometimes even more suffering. So that person in the fourth stage of your metta bhavana, the person that you're finding difficult, there's a good chance that their actions are contributing to their own suffering as well as yours. So that can be helpful to bear in mind. However unpleasant you might be finding it to be around them, well, it might be quite tough to be inside their head with whatever thoughts, fears, angers they may have. So yeah, just seeing how their actions are, at least in part, probably caused by some kind of unhappiness in their own life, stress, difficulty. And some people seem to just manage pretty well to swim against that tide, don't they, of conditioning. Against the tide of however they've been treated, whatever stress, difficulty, unhappiness, hardship has been part of their lot in life. Some people seem to manage to swim against the tide and not just dish out the same as whatever was dished out to them. And sometimes we manage less well to do that, and we kind of just get swept along with that current and go with the grain, and that's the best that we can do at that point. So in a way, seeing with that perspective, that wisdom perspective, is what allows compassion to arise. So that's what I mean by being compassionate. So it's not denying the harm that people may have caused. Not saying that things are okay when they're not. It has that aspect of discernment and clarity and honesty in it. But it is seeing people's conditioned nature. Seeing perhaps you might see how they've come to be the way they are just now. Or that might not be visible to you. But you can probably see how they are bound up in suffering to some degree. Experiencing the fruits of unhappiness in their life and bound up with causing more of it. This wasn't supposed to be a particularly gloomy talk, but there you go. This is a sobering part of it. Yeah, so just in a way seeing them, seeing ourselves circling at the hub of the wheel of life, trapped in unpleasant realms of existence, whether they're angry ones or fearful ones. So in the metta bhavana, we don't have to like the fourth person, the person in our fourth stage. We don't have to approve of their actions. That's not what we're being asked to do. But the invitation is to see if we can loosen a bit, feel some compassion for them, wish that they might suffer a bit less rather than more. Wish that they might cause a bit less havoc for their own sake as well as ours. And in that practice, our own minds are soothed by that compassion, by that metta. Our own hurt and our own anger is soothed by the response of our own compassion. So those are our themes for the evening: being discerning, honest, clear about what's happening, not fudging it, best we can. Being wise, seeing the conditioned nature of things, seeing the basis on which they might have come into being, and allowing a compassionate response to arise on the basis of that. So we'll have a meditation, and I invite you to think of this meditation as an opportunity to meet your own experience, whatever it is arising, thoughts, feelings, sensations, to meet your experience with wisdom and compassion. So to see the conditioned nature of experience, and if it's painful, just acknowledging that it is. If we have thoughts like, I want to be concentrated, why is my mind not more still? Why this? Why that? Why me? Whatever form it takes. See if you can just see how conditioned they are, how empty they are, those thoughts. They'll arise and they'll pass away. And if you want to use the breath as an anchor, as a place to rest your attention, that's fine. If that feels like it would be helpful, feel free to use the breath in that grounding, anchoring way. But yeah, just don't be in too much of a rush to yank yourself back to the breath. Allow yourself to also encounter your experience, other aspects of your experience. Yeah, let your experience be an opportunity to see a bit more deeply into the nature of mind, your own mind, human mind.